Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week once again, the greatest Tuesday of panel week, and it's time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Little John, and in studio with me, the Whiz Kid,
Matt Dixon.
Matt,
yep,
it's good to be back. I've been on the road. I love getting back to home base, and here we are. And already, I feel like I can't, you know, you can't turn your back for even a second, or the market will throw new data at you. Of course, we hadn't gotten data in a while because, oh, we're gonna, the whole government shut down. And then all of a sudden, well, we crack this thing back open, and then boom, data dumps.
Yeah.
And right out of the gate, we hear everybody's borrowing and defaulting.
Yeah,
that's everybody's pretty strong statement. We're seeing numbers getting worse. I mean, what is this all about?
Yeah, I mean, news came out today that loan defaults are really on the rise. And people that are behind on payments, that number of people is going up a lot. And so people are struggling to stay afloat right now. And so I think maybe part of the show is this concept of, are you swimming and treading water, or are you actually slowly kind of drowning in debt?
Yeah.
Because you can feel like you're swimming, but for how long, right? And a lot of people are really, really close to the edge. And so, yeah.
This is a show about investing and about wealth. Today it's a show about debt. There we go.
It is a little bit, but I think one of the bigger pieces in all of this is you can still have wealth, right? And be really over-leveraged. I think that's one of the key takeaways from today's show that we'll get into maybe towards the end of the show. But numbers aren't looking good behind the scenes. I saw that student loan delinquency today hit like a record high. The charts were showing that was, I think we're at over 14% now on delinquencies.
Yeah, not ideal.
No, nope. So the numbers don't look so great. And auto loans, too, that hit a 15-year high today. I think they said that...
When you say auto loans...
Loan defaults.
Okay,
so people that are
thanks.
Delinquent and
gotcha.
Like more than like 90 days or something over due on a payment, that is gone through the roof as well. So people just, they're not paying back their debts. And so part of me, you know, wonders like, what is some of the long-term effects on the market? Or maybe not long-term, short-term. What are some of the effects that we could see in the marketplace if people aren't paying back their loans? And we've seen it before, right? We've been there. We've seen it. Is it going to be the same thing this time around, or is it going to be different? 2008, people weren't paying on their home mortgages.
Yeah, I feel like there was something else going on there too, though.
Yeah.
Right?
There were some people that
were structurally not paying on purpose because it was advantageous.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the same situation today.
It's a little bit different, right? But there was a ton of unqualified buyers in 2008 that shouldn't have got home loans. They got the home loans, then they didn't pay. And so delinquency was massive in 2008. And right now, here we are in 2025, and it's the highest that it's been in 8 years.
Yeah.
So everything's trickling higher as far as people are just out of money and they're done paying money back.
So I'm curious. I mean, I think you've kind of embedded some of your thoughts in that right now.
Yeah.
Right. Because, what I see is a list of sort of data points here. So are you, I don't want to put words in your mouth per se.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're on the radio. We do that sometimes. So it sounds like what you're suggesting is that the increase in default rates is indicative of people being out of money.
Out of money. And I think that what I'm also trying to say is that we look like we've built this economy that's stable, but realistically it could just be kind of running on fumes at this point.
So here's the fun one. I'm going to kind of throw an idea out here. I know we didn't really rehearse any of this, but
sure.
I'm just curious what you think about it. And I think our listeners may have a similar curiosity about this that I think is worth unpacking a little bit. So there's this idea that the economy is really two different economies right now. Maybe even multiple economies. You have sort of the Main Street economy, and then you have the Wall Street economy. Mm-hmm. And I think you also have the super mega tech economy, and then you have the rest of the market at large. And then, so I guess what I'd like to know is, when you use the term economy, like, what's included in there? Because it seems like there are pockets of the economy, air quotes, that we could talk about, areas that are working in the system. And then there are areas that don't seem to be working in the system. But when we call it all the economy, it's like we lump it all in there.
I mean, I think it's hard to break it apart, right? But what we do know is that job loss is skyrocketing, right? Like, we're seeing reports of UPS laying off, what was it, a couple weeks ago, over 100,000 employees.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was like 40, but whatever, it's a lot.
It was Amazon laid off 40,000.
Maybe that's what I'm remembering. So
yeah, so hundreds of thousands of jobs kind of, you know, being removed. And so I think maybe that's driving some of this, right? Like, if people are falling behind on loans, maybe it's just because of the job loss, right? And so if jobs are kind of disappearing.
Oh, I think that seems like a reasonable connection.
If you're
right?
month to month and you lose your job, now you're not paying.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that I also think with the government shutdown, if paychecks were suspended for a while, that could have also been an issue.
Yeah.
I'm certain that there's a bunch of people that work in the government that are also month-to-month.
Not getting paid, yeah.
Well, because keep in mind, month-to-month is not a dollar figure. It's a lifestyle number.
Right.
Right? I think that's really important, by the way, that we sort of say that out loud for everybody to hear. Right? Living month-to-month has as much to do with how much your lifestyle costs as it does how much money you have. Right? Now, if you're at minimum wage, living month to month is highly likely, because just the general cost of life is such that you're going to probably not make it unless you have roommates and other ways to distribute the cost and get some economies of scale by partnering with other people.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you are, you could be making $100,000 a year and single and still live month to month. If you bought a bunch of stuff over time on credit, and you've maxed out your payments every month, and so you're thinking, oh, I'm doing fine, but really you're one missed paycheck away from the dominoes starting to fall.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw a stat today, it's not on my sheet, but I think it was 61% or something of Americans, even that are in the six-figure range, are actually paycheck to paycheck, which is wild.
That's literally why I bring this up
right.
as well.
Yeah.
Because it's a really foreign concept to me personally, but I think I've always lived with, this is, you know, everybody's got their own wiring for this. There's this scarcity concern that lives in the back of my mind. It's all, not necessarily rational, but it's part of my wiring. And because of that, I tend to ration a little bit, even if I don't need to. Not always, right? I'm aware of this. That's once you're aware of these things, you kind of navigate them different. But my default wiring is to be cautious and to not spend everything that I make. It's always fascinating to me to see folks that are wired in such a way that as soon as they get money, it leaves their hands.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, you know, and we'll talk about this later on in the show, there are actually a lot of people who appear to have a lot of wealth. But when you look at it, their lifestyle has creeped up to the point to where it's like, oh, well, your mortgage is, you know, $10,000 a month. And then all of your, you know, Porsche cars and Mercedes in the driveway, it's like, well, there's another, and you add it all up, right? And before you know it, it's like, well, no, they're paycheck to paycheck too.
So this is the interesting thing that we don't talk about on this program a lot, but there's plenty of room for it, is what's the difference between wealth signaling and wealth?
Right.
Right. We've actually talked about this a little bit. it's silly because we've even talked about dating on this show before.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've talked about is the idea of wealth signaling is something that people do because they think it's going to improve their value in the dating marketplace. Right?
Right.
Guys do this a lot. It's, let me look. Like, I think we were joking about, I think my daughter was here one day. We were talking about the big truck, mm-hmm. the truck with the lift kit and the big tires and all that stuff on it.
Right.
And then the guy goes home and he's broke, right? He can't afford anything else, but he's got that. Why? And, there's lots of jokes about, compensating for what? And the idea is, it's all wealth signaling.
Yeah.
Right? That's part of what's going on here. So the difference between having wealth and signaling wealth can be really significant. And paycheck to paycheck is sort of when you lift the hood up and see what's really running underneath there, you go, oh, mm-hmm. there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of ways, I think, that you can combat that. And, I know we've talked about it before where it's like, well, spend less than you make. But behind that, even, it's like there are practical things that you can do. And sometimes it just requires, I think, downsizing some of the expenses. It's like, well, I know you've got this $70,000 truck and a $1,200 a month payment on it, but maybe you can get rid of that and just go get something that you can actually afford, right?
Yeah. Well, I think this is, it's a topic worth unpacking a little bit more. I keep using that term today.
Yeah.
I think we should dig into that more. Is this idea of how do you right size your life? Like how do you make your lifestyle fit? There are probably some big numbers that we could talk about. There's some other things that are being signaled in the economy. But this whole debt thing, I know this, right? There's a pathway to navigate this. It's not. There's a lot of people that just want to throw their hands up and say, victim, it's never going to work. I'm just going to get railroaded by the new economy. There's no opportunity. It's not going to work. To these people, I'd say, not true, right? Not true. But you cannot keep doing what you're doing and expect to get something different if you're doing the wrong stuff. So we need to explore this a little bit. And so for those of you that are on the right track, this may be just a great show to listen to because it's going to kind of remind you of it's like that booster shot that's going to kind of keep you on the path of keep doing what you're doing. For some of you out there, you need your first booster shot, right? It's hey, we got to start doing something different if we're really interested in building wealth and not just signaling wealth.
Sure.
Okay. So let's unpack that when we come back, but we got to grab a break first. So stick around. We'll do that. And then on the flip side, we will, get into, play more on the True Wealth Show. But we got to take these breaks first. So stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, Matt,
yep.
Remember, if folks want to get caught up, here's the pop quiz. Where is the podcast findable?
You can go check it out on our website at littlejohnfs.com, and we even YouTube stream this thing, so it's kind of everywhere.
Right, you can find it on YouTube, you can find it there. So we have it under our Knowledge Center. We actually have a whole bunch of stuff. There's a weekly blog where we do market projections. There's a we got all these shows that we've logged forever, and so there's just a bunch of stuff that you can find, because I guess you have to have websites these days, so we do that.
Yeah.
But it's also, by the way, website's a great way. A lot of these shows are developed around what our client base and our listeners ask questions about.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll send us a question, and then we'll go, hey, that's interesting. So we will try to get to all those questions that you are asking. And, at some point we are even considering doing something really risky career-wise and taking live calls. So we shall see.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that one we got to be aware of. But anyway, let's kind of carry on here. We started with the new debt data. Mm-hmm. The new debt data suggests that things we're starting to see more defaults.
Yeah.
Historically, this has been a problem. It's a little early to suggest that these are drastic signals that the next 2008 is coming or something like that. By the way, that just for everybody listening, that it doesn't look like 2008. Even if we saw more defaults go up, it doesn't. And do you know why?
Well, partly because we didn't drastically change the lending standards.
Right. We didn't drastically change the lending standards, but let's go beyond that for a second. That's a really valid point, by the way. I mean, we still are documenting and trying to prove that people have the ability to pay the loans back. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer just a, right. Hey, you know, we kind of could do the paperwork so you get the loan. Now it is, well, there's some underwriting. And mm-hmm. So that improves the quality of the loans typically, not always, but typically.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, loan quality is just, that's a shortcut way of saying that the loan keeps getting paid by the borrower.
Okay. Right.
But we're seeing that borrowers aren't paying back some. So where does that really land? Well, in 2008, we had a whole bunch of mortgages that had been packaged into security blocks. Mm-hmm. And then what we saw is we would reinsure those and then declare them to be investment grade, even though they were subprime mortgages inside the packages.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is if you lose two or three mortgages in a block, it can make the entire thing not perform adequately as a whole unit. And so it can start to break things in the system. That's kind of what happened. And banks didn't have enough collateral to back up the loans that they'd made, and then loans were defaulting. So it became sort of a, in hindsight, we'll call it a comedy of errors where you did a lot of things wrong. And what we really also did was we tripped a circuit breaker by accident. Maybe on purpose even, but by changing the way collateral was accounted for,
mm-hmm.
right? We did something called mark-to-market accounting, and what that did was it meant that banks had to be able to come up with an open market price for assets that they had on the books. The problem was the assets were illiquid, and so there were no buyers because it was, hey, you know, this is not going to be sellable for 20 years.
Right.
And then it's like, well, you can't do that. You have to be able to sell it in order to get the capital if you need it. So you have to figure out what the market would pay for it. And the market says, well, who wants to buy an instrument that you can't access for 20 years?
Doesn't sound very enticing.
Yeah, that's not very liquid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even a 30-year bond, you could sell it to somebody else typically. So there's a ready-made market for that. But this other illiquid stuff, there wasn't a market for. So they had to create a market. The price was instantly gutted. So, you know, we saw like 40-50%. Decline in asset values, and all of a sudden there wasn't enough capital in the collateral system for the banks. So that triggered this cascade of failures amongst the banks, and the government had to come in with the TARP program to back it up. Okay, why are we telling you all this history? Just to say it doesn't look like that right now, right? There's a lot more collateral in the system, and it doesn't appear that we have the same kind of risk in the banking system, which means that if we saw a market move down like 2008, it would be like 2008 in the decline of the markets, but not in the makeup of the banking system and what created it. Right? Mm-hmm. It'd be a new problem this time that we don't know what it is yet.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you think that, I mean, we've kind of got a little bit of a cocktail of different things going on right now, right? So AI has obviously been eating up some jobs. And then you look at all of the inflation that we've had, for so long, and now, you know, when you look at the discrepancy between wage growth and then inflation, right? And so if consumers are starting to run out of money and debt levels are extremely high, if people start defaulting and they're delinquent and they're not buying assets, right? Or they're not buying products in the economy, and we start to see GDP drop because people just aren't buying anything. Do you think that we could start to see deflation in this cycle?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's the short answer, right? Because, you know, when we phrase it that way, but let me ask the question back to you with a slightly different spin on it.
Okay.
Suppose the conditions of the market are such that it triggers deflation.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see happening as a result?
Well, I think that if you look behind the scenes, like I know Trump floated giving out these $2,000 checks to everyone, right? Like that was in the news today. And he's saying, well, these tariffs are working, and so we're going to help out people by giving them some money, similar to these COVID relief checks. And I look at it and I'm like, well, if you're a really good economist and you're looking at this and you're like, well, here's the situation that we're in. We're at a pivotal point and we realistically could experience deflation. Maybe we artificially stimulate the economy by doing something like that, right? Like pushing money into the system. Maybe it's not $2,000 checks going out to everybody, but doing behaviors like that that's inflationary could potentially starve off deflation for a little bit. I think that could be a reality.
Well, sure. If you print more money and put it into circulation, that is inflationary in nature.
And I think that might be a realistic thing that we start to see.
Right. It's also, it sure looks a lot like a beta test for universal basic income.
Sure.
Which I'm not a huge fan of, just so we're aware.
Yeah.
That to me is sort of like the government stepping in and saying, why don't we just start with a little bit of redistribution out of the gate, give everybody a little bit of money at the start. To me, it's a little bit like parents giving their kids some money at Disneyland, right? If you just say, well, here's some money, spend it on what you want, okay?
Yeah.
And then some kids are going to behave different than other kids. But if you just do that for everybody, a bunch of people are going to run out and walk into the first store and buy the first thing they see, and they're not going to have anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, does that put money into circulation? Sure. Right? Did it redistribute it from the parents' accounts to the kids' accounts? Sure. Did the kids earn it? No. So did the kids view it as if it was money they earned? No.
Yeah.
So they spend it different. So I think that there's a certain amount of moral hazard to just giving people money. But does it accomplish what you're suggesting? You bet, right? What happened during COVID when we just threw money at people?
Right.
It didn't immediately trigger inflation. And this is what's hilarious to me is the number of people that were like, oh, it was great. I got this check. It was awesome. And then today they complain about how expensive everything is. And I go, keep in mind that when you accepted those checks 5 years ago,
You're still feeling
that
the effects.
That was buying today the last few years worth of inflation.
Sure.
That's what really happened. Mm-hmm. And ironically, it probably bought more inflation than the money you got.
Yeah.
Right? You've ended up spending more in everything else over the last 3 or 4 years as a result of the inflation that we really just jumped on. Okay? Because COVID killed the economy initially. When you shut, you know, we kind of did the old Windows reboot, right? Oh, blue screen. Mm-hmm. Turn it off and turn it back on.
That's kind of how it went.
And then when it's booting up, it's like, that's pretty ugly. The numbers look terrible.
Right.
Well, so what did we do? We threw money at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got inflation. And when people scratch their heads, I just think, you're kidding, right? Like a very first year intro student to economics could look at this and okay, such and such happened in the economy. What will be the outcome over the next 5 years? Inflation.
Let me ask you this. Maybe you can't answer it, and maybe it's too hard of a question. But if you got to just be the king, right, and they give you the crown, and they're like, all right, David, we need a heavy hitter to come in here and fix this. And you're staring down at everything that's coming through the economy right now. And you got a little angel on your shoulder that's giving you some advice and is like, hey, we've got a deflationary cycle coming. Like, what do you do? Like, if that was real and you knew that it was kind of coming and you had an opportunity to head it off, like, what could you do? Like, if you had control of the economy to try and hedge off some of this deflation that might be in the mix, or stagflation even.
It's a really challenging question because,
like, do you artificially stimulate it by putting more money into the system to just buy time? Or do you let deflation take its course and let things kind of catch back up to where they were?
Well, here's a funny question. How long do I get to be king?
Indefinitely, till you die.
Okay. So now let me explain why.
Sure.
Because if you think about the way that politics operates, there's this cycle with which you need to...
Yeah, you got put 4 years to fix something.
Yeah, you put something in place. And if you can't get results that you can point to, then you lose your job and somebody else later on will either take credit
for it
or they'll blame you
for something. That's why I said king, not president. You're king.
Yeah. I would say, were I king first, I would have to kind of acknowledge I'm probably not smart enough to
So you're going to all the Stanford, Yale, and Harvard graduates that are masters in economics?
Well, I think the system's too complex to nail it, but I think there's some things that are pretty
What's some low-hanging fruit? Yeah.
So here's some of the low-hanging fruit that we just have to acknowledge. We asked for a lot of this, right? We tried to get our cake and eat it too when we said we want cheap products, so we will outsource to other countries where they will have lower standards for labor, right?
Oh,
there'll be lower safety
that.
Standards. Oh, okay. What have I triggered?
There was a thing that was talking about this the other day that now there are some restaurants that are employing people in the Philippines to take your order at fast food restaurants, and they're paying them $3.50 an hour. And then they submit the orders because some people still don't like a kiosk or like a order at the little touchscreen. And so they're literally employing people in other countries to take orders here in America for fast
okay.
food.
So this, I'm going to look at the clock and I'm going to say, let me ask you, Matt, do you think our listeners care about the answer?
I think they should.
Okay. Then let's do this. Let's go to break.
All right.
We'll come back. And on the flip side, we're going to go through like this whole what do we need to do, right? So we'll do that,
okay.
But we'll grab a break first. So stick around. When we're back, we'll cover all this and more. You got True Wealth. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah. And we'll take a break. Be right back.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And Matt,
yes,
you somehow we went from debt to trying to figure out part of what's driving the economy, and you asked me this fun question of you're going to let me be king for an indefinite amount of time. Which really is saying, hey, if I gave you a magic wand and you didn't have to worry about the political pressure of keeping your job, what would you do to fix things?
Sure.
And what Matt and I have been talking about during the break, and this is really hard, is we have globalized the economy. And what we now have is different regions where things are more or less competitive. Okay. So imagine it's a little bit like having a 6A school play a 1A school. Okay, and there's this disparity of resources where you go, well, the 6A school has a competitive advantage because they have a bigger pool to draw from and they have more money per student. And so they have more training facilities, all of the things. Doesn't mean it's impossible for a 1A school to have just happen to have incredible talent show up and be, I mean, that's the story of Hoosiers, right? Back in the day, if you remember that basketball movie with Gene Hackman, you know, several decades ago. But anyway, what happens when we have to compete internationally on labor costs? And here in the United States, we enforce things like safety rules, fairness rules, minimum wage rules. And so we start to put in place all of these different worker protection rules. And it's through our government system. And most people would say, yeah, largely that's a good thing. Our employees, you know, deserve those things or whatever, you know, air quote deserve. But, you know, we're okay with that. The problem is that when you compete against other countries that do not have those rules in place, it means that they can afford to do things at a significantly lower price because the employer does, you know, that cost is no longer has to be built into the product of the labor. And people tend to struggle with this in the political spectrum because you tend to view people and as people rather than labor as an output, right? Imagine if labor was just done by robots. And I said, let's take people out of the equation, just say robots, we're going to do it. And you can build a cheaper robot overseas than you can build it here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's capable of doing the same thing.
Right.
And then somebody goes, well, they're not capable. So, all right, I get it. The robots are people. We're going to struggle with this one, right?
Oh, boy.
But I'm going to say, let's say that they can do 95% of what the American-made robot can do, but they can do it for half the cost.
Ooh.
The math is going to work out to buy the robots at half price. To get a 95%, because you could buy two or three of them and you'll get economies of scale that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a lot like how labor operates, is that labor is an input cost for a business. A person has to do it. That person has human value. I'm not discounting that at all. But you cannot pretend the economics are not at play. And that's why when we say, well, how are we going to fix this? And then they say, well, tariffs. Okay. Well, tariffs are a little bit like rebalancing the equation to make it so that somebody can't undercut your product here. But it's protectionist in nature, right? If we say, well, great, we're going to either make shoes here in the United States or we're going to make shoes in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, I'm kind of hinting at Nike.
Right.
Okay. But I'm not throwing Nike under the bus when I say this. It's a real decision for Nike to make. Everybody that wants to buy Nike shoes wants the Nike shoes to be affordable. But if Nike can pay somebody $5 a day in Vietnam, theoretical, hypothetical numbers, or $100 a day in the United States, that's a radical difference in input cost for assembling those shoes.
Yeah.
Now, if Nike can get to a point where a robot builds everything, they don't even need the labor. They can bring it back here to the United States, but that doesn't create any jobs. It just creates cheap product.
Right.
So
I think that's kind of where we're at right now, is a lot of companies are using AI to take over jobs because it can do it so much faster and it's such a cheaper cost. Yeah, you pay one time to get the AI system or a subscription each month to do it, but compared to a person, it's a lot cheaper. And so we're seeing jobs go by the wayside.
Well, we're seeing the jobs that AI can do step in and do them. I'm not convinced that all the jobs have to go away. I think, let's play the what if game of what if it went right? Okay, instead of the what if it went wrong, we all lose our jobs to AI. Okay, we think about Amazon and we think, oh my gosh, you know, they laid off 40,000 people. That's 40,000 people that are looking for jobs now. And I say, yes, that's not ideal. But what were the jobs that they were doing? And I think it's a Milton Friedman quote that was pretty funny when they said, he's looking at construction workers and they're digging a ditch with shovels. Mm-hmm. And he says, why don't you get a piece of heavy machinery to get that done? You can do it way faster and cheaper. And they say, well, yeah, but we'll lose all these jobs. And he says, oh, well, if this is about jobs, why don't we get a whole bunch more people and make them dig with teaspoons? And that's a little bit about how AI, you have to sort of think about this is about productivity and having people be able to produce more. If you've ever tried to do the, think about putting, let's use a real life example, putting a roof on and hammering nails versus using a nail gun.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is way faster.
Right.
Okay. The same worker can get a whole bunch more done with a nail gun than using a hammer and nails. Both will work,
right.
But the right tool for the job makes them more efficient and productive. I think that AI can become the right tool to make people more efficient and productive. We just don't know what the new jobs are going to be yet.
Hmm.
But I'll tell you why I think AI is a big, big deal. And again, we're playing the game of what if it went right? Okay,
correct.
A different game, what if it went wrong? There's a whole lot of what if it went wrong that's not Skynet and we all die. there's a whole bunch of other, it went wrong, but it didn't kill us. It just sort of changed the economy radically and we didn't know what to do with ourselves. But if it went right, there's a whole bunch of jobs that we haven't even created yet, but it's going to be amazing. And keep in mind, there's this massive elephant in the room called the federal debt.
Mm.
That debt is massive. And you think, how did you get to this? Remember, this was the show about debt.
It is.
And you know what looks really ugly is when the federal government can't pay its debt. Right now,
Yeah. The
federal government pays more in interest on the federal debt than we do for our military budget.
How do we use AI to pay down the federal debt? That's the real question.
That is the real question. And I believe the answer is AI generates really radical growth in GDP because workers are able to produce so much more than they could previously. And we're talking orders of magnitude. Imagine being able to get 6 to 10 times more things done in a day because AI becomes one of the most powerful tools you've ever seen in this economy.
Hmm.
In that world, AI becomes amazing.
I think and we it need creates to explore how seen. That's possible. Like, how does GDP jump? And give maybe like a few examples, or okay. even just one example, so that listeners can be like, oh, that makes sense.
And that could be our segment five if you want.
Yeah.
We joke because we rearranged segments. Segment five doesn't exist.
Nope.
Right? We were trying to figure out what do we talk about that really helps people wrap their mind around this. And personally, Matt, I think our listeners have been listening for a long time, and they're kind of aware of the financial planning stuff. That
sure.
This is something that I think it's on people's minds.
It is.
Is AI going to take my job? Is it going to ruin the economy? Am I going to find myself obsolete?
I hear that all the time.
So I think it's worth just doing a little segment on that. If you're game, I say we take our last break and then we come back and we just kind of hammer that.
Okay.
Okay, then that's what we do. We'll be back and let's talk about what might AI look like if it goes right. That and more. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with
Matt Dixon.
And I promised Matt that he could have this segment because, and he tells me, no. And I said, this is perfect.
You don't want me to have this segment.
We totally do.
No,
we've
you
got
don't.
12 minutes of tears, or maybe 11 minutes. So you're fairly pessimistic about what AI brings.
Yeah, I think in the short term, it'll be great. And I think we'll see exactly what you said. There's going to be a lot more people that are more productive. But I think it's a double-edged sword. And with that is going to come destruction, because people will lean on it too heavily over too long of a period of time, to the point to where it's like, well, we're a generation or two into this thing. And then what happens when kids grow up and AI is doing everything for them, right? Like, if AI is really that productive in handling all the things, and you're just able to kind of sit back and not have to work real hard, or it's doing all the thinking for you. Like, we're at a point where I think I just saw that the first musical artist broke the Billboard Top 100 that's not real. It's an AI bot that sings. And so, like, music gets replaced by AI. And art gets replaced by AI, because it eventually does it better than you can. And you become so obsolete that your mind is just mush and you live in basically this dimension that it creates for you. So a video game. It's almost, life becomes basically a video game because nothing's real. AI spoofs everything. You don't know what's true and what's false because your encyclopedia is
AI. It's a little bit like Ready Player One, if you've ever...
I haven't seen it.
Okay,
but,
well, anybody out there, it's this idea that they create a virtual reality world where people would rather be in that world than anywhere else. And so they put on VR goggles and a suit.
It's impossible to avoid that based on where on the trajectory that we're on right now.
I don't disagree. However, I think since my job right now is to take the other side of this,
okay,
I'm going to disagree.
All right. There you
and
go.
I want to say, don't disagree. It could get there. I think that, well, let me ask you this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matt, you personally, I'm not picking on you. I'm using you as an example because I think it's super relevant.
Okay.
2-3 years ago, mm-hmm, you were spending a lot of time doom scrolling and you just sort of got sick of it.
Right.
And I don't know what triggered that, other than, and I want you to put the right words in, but I recall you telling me is something along the lines of, I'm tired of it not being real.
Yeah.
And I want real life experiences. I don't want to just watch something else and just scroll endlessly.
Right.
And so you went on sort of a quest. At first, it was going to be to replace your device with something that wouldn't even give you the option.
Right.
And then you stripped a lot of it down. And I would wager that your screen time has dropped by 75% since 3 years ago.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
You know,
that might
at least half. I mean, at least half. I mean, like, you've done
way, down.
Way, way less now as a result.
Right.
And you get out and do stuff. And I would say, from where I sit, your overall productivity is unchanged from 3 years ago. But you have a kid now, too. And so I'm like, huh. So you managed to reclaim so much of yourself that you're able to be a full-time dad and still do most of the stuff.
Right. Okay. Fair point.
What stops other people from ultimately getting to a point of saying, I'm tired of it not being real?
Well, see, that's where I think the problem is we're going to become, like, the world will adapt. Payments will adapt. Everything will adapt to everything is going to be integrated into AI to the point where you can't function in society without it. And there will lie the problem. Like, when everything that you do is a transaction with an AI agent or an AI bot.
Like, so let me paint the picture of where maybe it looks different.
Okay.
Maybe. I have this theory, right? Now, I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to. When I say I should totally do this, but I don't want to do this because I've been slow rolling authoring a book.
Okay.
Right? It is a fiction book. And all I'm going to tell you is AI is a character in the book. I'm not going to reveal anything else.
Okay.
But I will say that the idea is that without people, mankind, right, AI doesn't really have anything to do. If AI became self-aware, at what point, like, what is its quest? AI doesn't really need to conquer. It doesn't have an ego to feed or anything like that, per se. So when people outline these scenarios of, well, AI learns that it needs to do these things to survive, it's like, I'm not sure what gives it a survival instinct that also makes it a predator versus a survival instinct that makes it a manipulator. But the manipulation doesn't necessarily mean that it has ill intent for those that are being manipulated. So let's keep this thought in our mind instead. What if AI became a super efficient helper and advisor, and it actually did teach you things, and it did expand your ability to judge things? It did help you get organized and stay on task, and it helped you to brainstorm and solve problems and be functioned like an extension of your memory.
See, that's the thing that scares me the most. That right there, that's the most terrifying end result of AI that I can imagine, because at that point, your brain isn't working. AI's brain is working. And so you just do it. You do whatever it tells you to do, or you believe whatever it tells you to believe. And so that takes away a lot of the human aspect of a human, because a human's, like, what makes humans so cool is free thought and creative thinking. And if it's instructing you and leading you,
I was thinking about it differently. I guess what you're suggesting, I'm thinking of it more like, if I'm saying I need to build this thing and I think these are the measurements, can you tell me which parts do I need to get ordered so that we have all the correct stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know what I've got in my garage. Do I have all the tools that I need right now, or do we need to get some other tools as well? Great. Are those tools that I can rent, or are they tools that I should buy? Here's some of the projects that are on the horizon, by the way. So is it worth buying, or should I just rent it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's able to advise on those things, but I'm still driving the mission of, I want this thing built to do the thing that I want. And my creativity is still part of it. It's just, it's a little bit like saying, well, you know, it's the assistant to the surgeon that's handing them tools and helping them with things along the way. And so if you can treat it more like the tool that you are utilizing, then I think it's really valuable. I think if your concern is that it treats you like the tool that it is utilizing, that's a problem.
Yeah, that'd be pretty spooky.
And, you know, it's great for Hollywood. I'm yet to, I just don't know that that's how it ultimately all goes down.
Right.
I think, I'm laughing only because I watched some commentary on The Matrix,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, if you guys have never seen the movie, it's this idea that we're all living in a simulation.
Right.
And at the end of the day, all of the variables were accounted for except for the fact that some choices that humans make are irrational. And those cannot be accounted for in an equation, because you can see what the decision will ultimately be. You just couldn't have predicted it because all of the rational things just stopped making sense at this point. Sometimes people make crazy decisions like, hey, you know, am I going to save this person I care about or let a million people die? And it's like, well, you know, can you really let a million people die? And this person says, yeah. And you go, what? Wait a minute. How do we do the math on that one?
Yeah.
And you just, computers don't know how to solve that one because that's the level of unpredictability that mankind is. So, boy, this show was a different kind of show, wasn't it?
It really was.
It starts with, hey, the default rates are going up in debt.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means?
AI is going to
take over the world.
Yeah. Well, we're good.
I just don't think we can escape it. Is the challenge? I think AI is. It's like AI and robotics are necessary in order to try to drive our economy. If we don't drive our economy, one of the things that we have shown is that we lack the political will to make the hard decisions that are required to balance our government's debt.
Do you think that the whole thing could just fall flat on its face? Like we watched, I mean, everyone thought that EVs were going to take over and everything would be a Tesla by the year 2030.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to do what people think. I don't think a super intelligence takes over and we're all just, you know, plugged
no,
in.
No, I'm saying, do you think that all this venture capital that flew into AI just gets destroyed because AI doesn't end up being the profitability source everyone thinks that it is?
I don't want to make like a yes or no, but I would say, I think that there's a very good probability, like better than 85%, that there's some really big losers in this space.
Right. Kind of like everyone thought the internet stocks in the late 90s.
I could see some 99 style events happen. We still haven't figured out how to power all these chips we're making, right? You know, we got a million kerbillion chips and not enough power. That's a real infrastructure issue. And infrastructure is not something you just go, whoop, wave a wand, it's fixed.
Well, what's the big takeaway for our listeners?
Oh, I think the big takeaway is that change is coming, and it's going to be incumbent upon you to stay on top of that. Certainly, you can hear from the conversations Matt and I are having with you today that we think about this often,
right,
and it gets baked into what we do. If you've got other questions, personally, I would say give us a call. How do they reach us, Matt?
Yeah, 541-375-0898, or go to the website at littlejohnfs.com.
All right. Well, here's the music, so we got to run. Until next time, thanks for tuning in today. I am Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to The True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.